The Supreme Court wrapped up its 2003-2004 session this past week with a pair of legal rebukes to the Bush administration. The justices ruled that detainees held at Guantanamo Naval Base in Cuba do have access to federal courts, at least to test the legality of their imprisonment, and they also ruled that Americans held on allegations related to terrorism still must be accorded all the rights of a U.S. citizen. But the court certainly did not always go against President Bush and other decisions. Mimi Wesson teaches at the University of Colorado Law School in Boulder, and she frequently helps interpret legal matters for us, and she joins us from the studios of KGNU in Boulder. Hi, Mimi. Welcome back.
Morning, Leanne. Great to be back.
So, how did you overall see the Supreme Court session this past year?
You know, I think it was a sort of a fireworks show. There were a few fizzlers and some bombshells, and then, of course, the best for last, the grand finale, was spectacular.
How appropriate for the 4th of July. Let's start with the small stuff and build up to the grand finale. What did you see as a fizzler?
Well, you may remember there was a lot of kerfuffle earlier in the year about a case called Cheney versus District Court, in which some people were seeking access to the inner workings of the administration's energy task force. And it was a little controversial because Justice Scalia had shared a social location with the vice president, who was a party to the case. In the end, the court didn't even divide very closely. On a vote of 7-2, it decided on very technical grounds to send the case back to a lower court. So nothing very spectacular there.
What do you consider the big bombshells?
I think the most shocking decision was probably a case called Blakely versus Washington. This fellow Blakely had pleaded guilty in Washington state to the crime of kidnapping his estranged wife, and the standard sentence for this crime would have been about 53 months. But the trial judge gave him 90 months after finding that he'd committed the crime with deliberate cruelty, which was a factor that in Washington meant the judge could impose the higher sentence. Blakely argued to the Supreme Court that he had experienced a violation of his right to jury trial, even though there were some, perhaps, indications that the court might be sympathetic to his argument. Even so, most court watchers were very surprised when the court sided with Mr. Blakely, 5-4, and decided that when juries are left out of the decision whether a sentence should be enhanced by some aggravating factor, that the Constitution is violated. So that was a very surprising outcome, and one that is likely to create a lot of disruption, some say chaos, in the criminal justice system for the next few years.
That leaves the grand finale, and those have to do with the war on terrorism. First of all, what were they?
There were three cases. Two of them, Hamdi and Padilla, were cases that had to do with American citizens who've been kept in indefinite and incommunicado detention in military detention facilities. And the third had to do with 14 prisoners who were being held in custody at Guantanamo Naval Base in Cuba.
So start with the Hamdi case. What happened there?
Mr. Hamdi is a U.S. citizen, and he's been held in custody ever since President Bush declared that he was an enemy combatant, although he denies that and says that he was just an aid worker who was caught up in the chaos of Afghanistan immediately after 9/11. The administration has argued that it has the power to hold a person it deems to be an enemy combatant in indefinite custody, both inherently and because Congress authorized it to take these measures in the aftermath of 9/11. And it also says that if he does have a right to some kind of hearing on his status, that that right was satisfied because the government produced a document, a written statement by a Defense Department employee explaining why they thought Hamdi was an enemy combatant. Only one member of the court went along with all of the administration's arguments. Eight members, in an opinion authored by Justice O'Connor, said that the executive could temporarily detain persons who they deem to be enemy combatants, but rather promptly they have a right to a hearing before an impartial tribunal where they have notice of why they're claimed to be enemy combatants and the assistance of counsel. She went on to suggest that this wouldn't have to be a federal courtroom. It could be perhaps a military commission, but I don't think that's going to happen to Mr. Hamdi because the administration's guidelines for military commissions expressly exclude their use in cases involving citizens. So it appears that Mr. Hamdi is going to have a hearing before too long in a federal courtroom. It won't necessarily be like a criminal trial. For example, he won't necessarily enjoy the presumption of innocence. The government's evidence can be partly hearsay, but it will be held before an impartial judge. And that was a significant victory for those who advocated against the executive's most extravagant claims of wartime power.
The Padilla case was also about enemy combatants. What happened there?
Very similar case to Mr. Hamdi's, but it turned out to be, in essence, a fizzler because the court held that Mr. Padilla, since he was in custody in South Carolina, should have filed his case in federal court in South Carolina. Instead, the case was filed in New York because that's where he was before the government whisked him away. So by a closely divided vote of 5-4, the court holds that his case has to be refiled in a proper venue.
And then there was the Guantanamo military base case, and this was not about American citizens.
That's correct. All of the prisoners at Guantanamo are non-citizens. These 14 prisoners argued that they had a right of access to federal courts in the United States to make certain claims about the conditions of their detention. And the administration's argument was, in essence, a jurisdictional one, that American courts had no jurisdiction at all because Cuba, Guantanamo, are not within the territorial jurisdiction of the United States. The court sort of considers the unusual arrangements between the United States and Cuba, which date back more than a century, over this piece of real estate, and in the end decides that there's sufficient American sovereignty in this area to justify exercise of jurisdiction by federal courts. But the court did not decide any of the prisoners' substantive claims. It sent the case back to a lower court for that.
Mimi, looking at the entire session, do you think it provides any new insights into this group of justices?
What I see when I look back over this term is a court that is often divided, but less often divided along the familiar and predictable grounds that we may have seen in earlier terms. Some of the old alliances seem to be breaking up. Some of the justices seem to be striking out on their own without their usual allies. So it makes it a much more interesting but also less predictable court than it would have been a couple years ago.
And Mimi, of course, because not all legal action takes place in the Supreme Court, are there any other cases that have caught your attention?
Well, there's a recent, very interesting decision by the highest court of the state of New York holding unconstitutional that state's death penalty law because of a potentially coercive jury instruction that's always given, a defect that the court said could only be remedied by the legislature's passing a new statute. Because this decision rested on state constitutional grounds, it's not subject to review by the United States Supreme Court, which is a useful reminder that not all the action happens in the Supreme Court and that the Supreme Court's power is limited. In our system, it has to share power not only with Congress and the executive, but with the states and the courts of the states as well. Power is distributed all around in different locations, and that's part of what we celebrate as the rule of law on this 4th of July.
Weekend Edition legal analyst Mimi Wesson teaches at the University of Colorado School of Law in Boulder. She also writes mystery novels. Her latest book, Chilling Effect, will be published next month. Mimi, as always, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Leanne.